We're here at the meeting of the Organization of American Historians in San Francisco in April 2013. I'm Steve Wheatley. I'm the Vice President of the American Council of Learned Societies, and I'm here with Susan Ware, who's the General Editor of the American National Biography, and I'll be posing questions to Susan. And the first one is simple and straightforward. What is the American National Biography?
It's the premier biographical dictionary that contains more than 19,000 entries on American men and women who have shaped American history and culture. And its predecessor was the Dictionary of American Biography. And then it was updated starting in the 1980s, published in a print edition in 1999. And now it is updated semi-annually in an online edition.
Who uses the ANB and why would they use it?
Well, I always think of it as primarily being used by students and teachers who want a comprehensive yet compact introduction to an individual life. What is so useful about the ANB is that it answers not just the question of who was the person, but it also answers the question of why were they important historically. And it does it in a way that gives you the answer pretty quickly and in a way that's engaging to read. And I always think of it, because I'm an American historian, as being especially useful to people in the United States. But of course, this tool as a research tool would be enormously helpful to those who were studying American history that weren't living in the United States. So it really is a truly international scope and interest.
And where does one find the American National Biography?
Well, these days we just give the website, which is www.anb.org, and it will get you to an introductory page that gives you a sense of what the ANB does and the kinds of resources that it offers. But to really access the content, you need to have a subscription. And usually that is handled by your institution, your library, and there are also individual subscriptions.
Why biography? It's the last name of the publication. Why that lens on history?
Well, you're asking someone who is trained as a historian and a biographer, so of course I'm somewhat biased. But to me, biography has always been one of the best ways to look at and learn about broader themes in American history. You can use an individual life as a window on wider developments. And for me, as a writer and also many years in the classroom, I think it provides a personal connection to the big themes and events. Biography is a field of history that people love to read, and students love to learn about history through that frame. And I think history really does often come alive for people by studying the lives of individuals. And this can be significant individuals like presidents and popes, but also those who are less well known.
You recently celebrated your first anniversary as general editor of the ANB. What have been the most satisfying aspects of the job?
I think for me, the most fun so far has been reconnecting with colleagues, graduate school buddies, friends, former students, anybody that I have a chance to send an email to say, hi, I'm the new general editor of the ANB. Can I pick your brain about this issue? Or perhaps, would you like to write an essay for me? And I must say that I have twisted more than a few arms and signed up some of my friends to do some important essays, precisely because they couldn't say no. And that was very satisfying. The other thing I was surprised about was how much I enjoyed getting back into the hands-on process of editing, which I hadn't done in a while, and which can be enormously satisfying, especially when you start with a good essay, but you just tweak it a little bit to make it a really fine essay, and I was surprised at how good that felt.
When you are asked to describe your vision for the ANB, what do you say?
Well, that to me, there is a very simple answer to that, and my vision is of a truly inclusive biographical dictionary. And again, this comes from my training as a women's historian, where of course we are always concerned about the trilogy of race, class, and gender. But my idea of diversity is even broader than that, including a wide range of categories and attributes such as geography, where people are from, parts of the regions of the country, age, sexual orientation, underrepresented occupations, a whole range of things. I think I also want the A and B to have a good balance between the already well-known lives, those that get the New York Times obituaries that we read each morning when we get up, and of course I read them and think, oh, okay, that person goes in the A and B. And then those lesser-known folks who are sometimes known to specialists in the field or perhaps have only recently been discovered, and their lives too are an important part of the story and they need to be included and recognized.
Why is it important to keep updating and adding content to a biographical dictionary like the A and B?
Well, I think the short answer is that the world keeps changing and so does scholarship. New fields are invigorated and we find new figures, we have new interpretations of old settled questions, and it's very important for a biographical dictionary, indeed any kind of reference work, to keep up to date with new trends and interests. And my sense is always that if it's frozen in time, it loses its utility as time goes on. It just isn't as useful when you expect someone's entry to be in there and you stopped 10 or 20 years ago. And I think one of the things that is enormously exciting to me about where we are now in the world of publishing is the ability to update constantly online. And if you think about, you know, even 10 or 15 years ago, we would do a project like this, it would be published, and that would be it. And this way, now we really can continue to add new content, revisit old topics, and keep the A and B growing because it needs to speak to the changing needs of the people who are using it. And so this is an ongoing process. It's a bit daunting at times when you think about it, but I think in the long run, it's fantastic for a biographical dictionary like us to be able to continually update.
When one talks about the online world, one thinks about Wikipedia. When the print edition of the A and B was published in 1999, Wikipedia didn't even exist. Now it contains more than 4 million entries, including many biographies. As general editor, how do you make the case for the A and B in the age of Wikipedia?
Well, this is something that I've given a lot of thought to, and I think we really need to think about what distinguishes the A and B from Wikipedia. And there are some very clear and, to me, compelling answers. The first is that the essays are written by scholars and experts in the field. And I think this is very important in terms of how we pitch the A and B, that we really, people who write these essays know what they're writing about. I think as a side benefit of that, they tend to be more accurate factually because they have gone through a rigorous process of editing and fact-checking. I think they definitely are better written because they are penned by an individual scholar rather than by a committee, which is basically how Wikipedia edits and changes things. I think they are also able to present a clear interpretation and summary of a life, not a collection of facts. And that's something that the A and B has always done. It's part of our instruction to contributors that they should end with a summary. And Wikipedia just lays up the facts and nothing more. And I think that's something that really is an important contribution that we make. And finally, we offer much better bibliographies for future research. And one of the ways in which people do use the A and B as a resource is they'll read an essay. If they want to find out more, then we can point them to the biographies, the few secondary sources, the New York Times obituary. And that's not something that Wikipedia offers. So we really offer a package. And we also offer consistency across the board. And as anyone who spent time with Wikipedia knows, it varies dramatically depending on what area you're in, who's in charge of the content.
As general editor, you write a blog about your work, and you recently wrote a blog post about what it was like to write an entry for the A and B. Why did you make that a first-year priority, and what did you learn?
Well, I had wanted to call the blog post Sauce for the Goose, Sauce for the Gander, and I was overruled by the OUP folks. But basically, my thought was, well, if I'm editing all these essays, I ought to try doing one myself and see what it's like being in on the other side of the table, or however, whatever metaphor you want to use. And of course, I had done biographical essays in the past, including for the A&B, but I was feeling a little rusty. So I think that going through the experience, there were two things that I learned, or rather relearned. One is how difficult it is to craft an essay that covers both factual material and presents an interpretation of why someone is significant, all in a very short amount of words. And it really is a skill to be able to do this well. And the second thing I learned is that even though it seems like a fairly simple assignment, write up someone's life in 1,200 words, it always takes much more time than you think. I mean, it is surprising how much effort can really go into these if you read the people's books and think about, look at interpretations and whatever. And I think the other thing that I really learned from this, and I didn't put it in the blog post, and I probably just as well, because although now I guess it will be public, I had set myself a word limit of 1,000 words for this essay on a feminist scholar named Carolyn Heilbrunn. And even though I am a very concise writer and I'm a very strict editor, it came in closer to 1,200 words. And try as I did, I really didn't feel that I wanted to cut it down any further than that. And I think that one of the things that helped me as an editor think about is that when I'm editing a piece, I need to look at it not specifically in terms of the number of words, but how many words does it take to get the job done well. And I think that it will probably in the end encourage me to give some of my authors a little bit of slack when it comes to going over their word counts. And of course, again, that is one of the advantages of an online dictionary as opposed to print. We don't have to be quite so careful about the amount of space that we take. So I'm glad I did it, but it was more work, but quite satisfying in many ways.
So you've got the real experience of what it's like to write for the A&B. How can scholars and writers get more involved in the production of the American National Biography? Are you interested in hearing from potential authors, in receiving nominations of potential subjects?
Absolutely. And I think one of the main roles I can play as general editor is just being open to suggestions from people who write to me. And of course, that's the great beauty that we're all online all the time now. You know, I can be reached through Oxford or through the ACLS. And, you know, if there are people that have been missed in past editions or just new people who have surfaced, make me a pitch. And very often I will say, yeah, I think that person really does belong in the A&B. So that's one way. And in fact, we really depend in some ways. I always channel the line from, I think it's A Streetcar Named Desire, being dependent on the kindness of strangers. And we really do depend on that whole world out there of people who care about biography and history to feed us ideas of people that should be included. And we are also always looking for people who are interested in writing these essays. And one of the ways that I describe my job as general editor is as a matchmaker. And I really try to make matches between writers and subjects. And that's a very satisfying aspect of my job. So I certainly encourage people to get in touch with us. And I respond to emails very quickly.
When you celebrate your fifth anniversary with the A&B in 2017, what changes and new features would you like to see in place?
Well, I certainly hope that we will by then have much more comprehensive coverage of subjects who have died in the last 20 years. It's very important, again, to be keeping up to date. Also have demonstrated progress towards the goal of a more inclusive and diverse A&B. Although, even though I'd love to all of a sudden have an A&B that was 50-50 male-female, that's not going to happen. But I think we can, from this point forward, really try to make sure that these questions of diversity and inclusion are at the top of our priorities. I think by then we will have a dynamic and attractive new website that both showcases our wonderful content, but also makes it easy and logical for users to be able to find what they want and need. And again, that's still 4 years out. The A&B is a work in progress. I'm still learning things every day, and that's one of the most exciting things about the job.
Well, thank you very much.
Thank you.